Poems and short stories. Tonight, however, he's here to chat and talk about a completely different passion in his life, a lifelong love affair of which we have seldom, if ever, heard him discuss on radio. That's, of course, the story of Kerry's hurling and football and their history. Dr. John B. Keane, you're welcome to Tavistock.
Thank you, Richie. It's a great honor to be here, my friend.
And of course, joining you in the studio is your good friend, your lifelong friend, retired Garda, former North Kerry goalkeeper, former Kerry junior, and a playwright himself, Tony Gearn. Tony, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much, Richie.
Yeah, man, two great men with us tonight.
We certainly feel humble tonight, and if John B. keeps going like he did for the last 5 minutes, we're in for a real, real
because I thought I couldn't get through the introduction. John, the first thing I must ask you, and I always had it in my mind to ask you, we often heard your vest was the secret of Kerry, enough, and I wish that I knew, you know that.
Yes, I know. Yes.
What is the secret of Kerry? What's their greatness? Where is the tradition? Where did it all come from, John?
It's magic. It's magic. There's a sort of a gossamer lunacy in Kerry that'll be found no place else in the world. And I think that we reflect the cragginess and the grandeur and the beauty of our scenery as well. We reflect the place we live in. We reflect our ancestry. And I think that to be born a Kerry man is to have a head start over any other man born in any other part of the world. I'm totally convinced of that wish. It's a head start.
Yeah, it reminds me of something that I read when I was a young fella about the Kerry man with the inferiority complex. And knowing John B., he probably wrote it. The fellow, the Kerry man with the inferiority complex, he thought he was the same as everyone else. So.
Yeah, that was
Tony, there's a fierce tradition in Kerry, isn't there?
The absolutely marvellous tradition in Kerry, and you're imbued with it from the day you're born. I'd say there's a judge, the stripes are on your back when you go up, and when you go up to the holy water can't have very spearing with water for fear they'll wash off the green and gold. They just barely touch the top of your head, as you can see when you're looking at a bald pate.
And of course the tradition is passed on, and just passed on in a lot of different ways, because I tell you, and we'll come to it later, but just in passing, the man that performed the wedding ceremony for you and Mary was a Father Cotton. He was a selector of the team tonight. We'll come to that later, yeah. And you were carrying on a bit of a tradition. You're getting in your speak early. John, you grew up in Church Street in Listowel, born 1928. When was your first thoughts about Kerry football and football? Talk to us about that. And what do you remember about the very, very early days in Listowel and Kerry footballers and that type of a thing?
I remember being sent out by my father and Paddy Griffin and Nicky Quill and Jack Stack to stop a car coming from Tralee to get the results of a match. And sometimes there'd be a match between Kerry and Clare or something, and of course the boys would pull up in the car. Kerry 4 points, Clare 4:14. You see, rising me, you see, young fella, you see. And I'd have to stay there till I get the right score. But then I graduated to go into matches, and I used to often go with my uncle Jackie Kane and his pony and trap. But Jackie Kane had the most priceless possession in that street from about 1936 onward. He had a modern radio. And through that radio came the magic of Croke Park via Mihal O'Hare. And we'd sit around there, the house packed from top to bottom, up the stairs, out the hallway, down the sides of the street. Not a sound to be heard. And O'Hare, Kerry and Galway. Jackie broke the wireless three different times in temper at O'Hare. He always blamed O'Hare, not the referee. And the excitement was enormous. We had Ellis Dorman playing at the time too, Tony McAuliffe, a lovely footballer. We had Gary playing later with Roscommon when he got a brilliant goal, and we had the great Kennelly and Stephen Stack. I think we've only 10 All-Ireland medals in the town.
Somebody told me, John, that you had your first drink coming from a Munster final in Killarney.
There was a crash. Myself and my brother Didi and my brother Eamon, the joker they used to call him, and my father and the same Paddy Griffin, and driven by this man's father, John Gearn. We pulled up for a drink anyway, and the next thing was, word went out that there was a bad crash in the road and everyone disappeared. We sat on at the table. We drank everything in sight. Everything in sight. We were only about 10 years and 12 years of age. We drank and we sang and roared the whole way home. They couldn't figure out what was up with us. But there were mighty times. But to get back to Cahan for a second. I'll always remember Cahan, a fellow I met in Carlow by the name of Ned Doug. Grateful forward. He got two great goals here. Carlo beat Kerry here in Division 1 of the league, I remember.
He played in the 50s, John.
He did. He beat down as well, nearly. And anyway, he said that Cahan came over. I said, this fella, anyway, they were playing Carlo, and Cahan put out his hand. He said, hello. He said to him, the man said, hello. And Cahan said to him, are you married? No, the man said, well, Cahan, I'm glad of that anyway, he said. And he said to him, then he said, no, he said, you may be the best of friends, he says, but you see that line there now? Don't come inside that line, he says. Our old friendship is finished forever. But he had lovely touches like that. Yeah. Like the time, if I ever forget the story about Barn, and I hope Mass Corbett brings up. Mass Corbett was one of the great, great football referees of all time. He had refereed countless inter-county matches. And there was a National League match over in Milltown, Melbourne, County Clare. This would be the early 40s. And Barn was playing full-back. They often shoved him in there. They put him everywhere. In fact, he played full forward. But anyway, Obama was playing full back. And they tugged out against a very tough, clear team in not so immaculate conditions. In place, the fact that the square was a sea of mud. And anyway, the first ball that came into the square across the man, Merkin Barn, made no attempt in the world to go for the ball. He went for Barn, and he caught him, upended him, down in his face and eyes, stuck to the ground in muck. And Mass Corbett, who, despite being an impartial referee, was a great fan of Barnes. Stopped the match, left the field, went out next door, went into a small farmhouse, got a bucket of warm water and a towel, and came out and washed Barnes down from head to toe, and got a new tux for him and a new jersey. And I rang Mass the other night. I said, will it be all right to tell this story? Do, he said, you know. And he said, another time, he said, my life was at risk, he says, in the Armand Hotel. But I had a man with me, he said, and I knew I was safe. Who was the man? I said, Johnny Welsh of Ballylongford, he said. I wanted no one else, he said, but that man with me.
A great friend of yours.
Great friend of mine. But anyway, apparently, Moss put off the gun of Brady for hitting the fellow belt of a fish. You see? And there was a couple of the cabin boys and the gunner as well looking for Moss, you see, to have a few words with him. You know, a few gentle words with him. And the next thing was, anyway, didn't the Irish press appear by the fellow who wrote the article, and there was the gunner's fist implanted firmly in the puss of the man he stuck, and he was justifiably put off. But I hope Mastering's up about that, like, you know.
Things like that,
John. But Johnny Welsh, you're talking about Johnny Welsh was the most extraordinary human being that ever graced the world. Great rugby player, Munster champion boxer, played senior rugby for Munster, got the winning try for, last minute try for Rockwell in the Munster Colleges final. But his greatest achievement was this, and he told me the story himself about his son Barry. He was out in the boat, I think they were crossing to Clare. And it was a fairly windy day with a lot of squalls. And the next thing was, Barry was swept overboard. And as you know, he had a foxy head. Now, Johnny was faced with a terrible dilemma. Would he wait for him to surface, or would he dive in where he last saw him? Powerful swimmer. He waited and he waited and he waited. And he was starting to despair. And he blessed himself. And the next thing he saw, a little blob of red. His son's red head. And he dived in off that boat and he got him. And he brought him in. And he said, no one ever held each other so tight, he says, as myself and Barry did that day. But he gave, so the bomber showed the same courage.
And Barry went down to Croke Park.
He did. But Johnny was extraordinary. He was next to, of course, he had the hottest temper, I suppose, in the world. But that's no harm at all.
I'd say you had a bit of a temper yourself.
I'd be fairly quick, but any fight I ever had was forgotten the minute the match was over.
Well, I was just, when he was talking about the cabin match and the photograph with
the gunner,
I said things like that never happened in the town league in Listowel.
If you got a wallop in the town league in Listowel, you would never get up. Because local rivalry is the most bitter of all. But thanks be to God, it all ended when the whistle was blown. And that's the beauty of Gaelic. I always found that great beauty in Gaelic football. It was never carried on. You were never confronted by mobs in another town, like other sports I could mention. You were always respected. And there was always a handout for you. I'll always remember the first time I was ever called Sir was in Ballylongford. I remember myself and a fella from my van took a day off from St. Michael's, a spot of mooching. It was the evening of Ballylongford races. And we stole two bikes from the square in the store and headed off. We had the price of 2 pints. We went into Kennelly's in Ballylongford, and Brenda's mother was behind the counter, Mrs. Kennelly. My pal, who was a priest now, he went up to the counter and said, we'll have 2 pints of store, please, and she shook the head. She didn't embarrass us by saying no, shook the head. So we sat down and we had 2 bottles of orange. Time passed anyway, and they started coming in from the races. And who landed in but big Tim Sullivan of Leenamore? Do you remember Tim?
I don't
either. He was Johnny's great pal. He was playing goals for the Rangers. Anyway, big Tim landed in. and he looked around him as I was, and he saw me sitting down, and he put out his huge paw over the crowd, and he said, "You're welcome to Ballylongford, Mr. Kane."
Yes, yeah.
Well, I was astonished.
John, there's a pair of blinkers for your ears there. Look at the
vinyl. There's a Tim Carmody on the line. Tim, how are you?
Vincent.
Oh, Vincent. Vincent, how are you?
Hello, Vincent.
Hello, Eamon.
Welcome, Vincent.
Thanks very much indeed, Eamon.
What are you to talk to us about?
Well, what do you want me to talk about?
Anything at all you want to, Vincent. Where would you? Tell us what you know about this man here.
I must congratulate John B. anywhere, and he couldn't have a nicer man inside in the studio.
Tell us about the town leagues, Vincent. They tell me he had to be transferred at an enormous fee from Church Street to Greenville.
Oh, that was before the Bosman ruling.
I was given to Greenville.
Greenville were a bit, they were a bit short, and they wanted a bit of, skill and somebody with plenty of pace. And I think John B was offered to them. But I think he had great friends behind there as well, the Healy's.
The Healy's, no. In fact, I have here in front of me, Vincent, your book, Listowel and the GA. We owe an awful service to Vincent.
Oh,
sure, yes. An awful service, because these stories and these poems will be forgotten. But here's the one I wrote myself about the Greenville team. It won't take a minute.
Thanks for time.
Come all ye true-born Irishmen from here to Healy's Gate, and I'll sing for you a verse or two, 'twon't take long to relate. You may sing about Cú Chulainn bold and the mighty men from Sneem, but they wouldn't hold a candle to that mighty Greenville team. Yarraha, says Billeen Sweeney, sure I'll tackle up my ass, and I'll put on my new brown suit that I wears gone to mass. I'll hit the road for Listowel town by the morning's early beam, and I'll bring home Berkey's mutton for that mighty Greenville team. That dry ball won't suit him, said the pundits from the town, but they pulverized the ashes and they mesmerized the gown. Next came the famous borough, their fortunes to redeem, but they shriveled up like autumn leaves before that Greenville team. The next verse, the sad verse. 'Twas the white trout that done the trick, John L. was heard to say. We ate the morning, noon and night in the build-up to the fray. They hardened up the muscles and they built up the steam, until no power on earth could stand that mighty Greenville team. Upon that.
Vincent,
you hear that?
Are you gone, Vince?
I'm here.
Vince, God bless you for producing this book for us. We're very proud of it and proud of you, my friend.
I know that, John.
Yeah. Listen, Vince, is it true that despite all that, that Greenville never won the town league?
Well,
we did.
No, they won the half a town league.
The Tri-Cup.
They won the Tri-Cup.
The Tri-Cup.
Which Ned Healy liked to call the National League.
Listen, Vince, and one of the people I believe that were involved with Greenville over the years was the famous Bob Murphy, who would be well known to Gales in the Imperial and Tralee.
Well, Bob was lovely. And a great Greenville man.
Great. Bob was a great Listowel man as well, a great North Kerry man as well.
I have one small story about...
Right, Vince.
Not taking up your time.
But, no, Vince.
We were having centenary Dublin under Listowel Arms, 1985, and... Mick Loftus was president of the GA, and Frank King, they were both guests, and Tadhg Moriarty, chairman, and myself, we were last to go in. So we were just sitting down to start the first course, and next thing the lady came in from the reception, she says, "Excuse me," she says, "Mr. Moriarty." So Tadhg says, "Oh, that's me." She says, "The phone." And Tadhg looked over at me, "Oh, Jesus," he says, "who's going to ring now?" So she says, "It's some fella from the Independent." So Tadhg anyway excused himself and he says, "I won't be a minute." So he went out anyway. And I believe the conversation was as follows. "Hello, is that Mr. Moriarty from Listowel Emmets?" "Oh, that's right. Who am I speaking to?" "Oh, such and such a fella from the Irish Independent." very good. "And what can I do for you?" "Well, I'm awful sorry, I was supposed to go down tonight, but I couldn't get down, but could you fill me in any bits of news or important things about the club? I intend to do a little feature tomorrow in this Independent." "Oh, I will, of course," says Tadhg, and Tadhg started naming old fellas that were playing, didn't play, and next thing, "any administrators?" So Tadhg started with the administrators, and then all of a sudden the man says, "with all those fellas you mentioned, though, what about Bob Murphy? What kind of a footballer was he?" Next thing Craig says, yeah, he was only a town league footballer. And all of a sudden the man says, F you, Tig. Who was it for Bobby?
Vincent, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Lovely to talk to you. Lovely to talk to you. We're still seeing the commentary. We were talking about one Moss Colbert. Moss, you're welcome.
Thanks a lot.
Moss Allstock. Thank you for it. That was a great story about yourself and Bond long ago.
Wasn't it
a great? And Moss, we were just saying what a great referee you were.
Because about 12 years later, I called in his house for the drink.
Yeah.
I guess I came to the bar and I said, you owe me good few pounds, decision. I was a doctor, so did you doctor for Victor Malbe? Yeah, you weren't plastered. Who were there? He said to me. I was very back, he says. I went for the bucket of water from the town.
Moss, did you referee Kerry County Finals?
I did.
I was thinking you did.
Oh, I did. I was referee all over Kerry.
Any bad stories about Kerry men down here?
No, but I'll never forget one day I was refereeing an All Kerry Championship.
Oh, yes, you'll have ones about that, all right.
Johnny, would you have time? Come in. It was a scorching warm day. I never forget it.
Yeah.
It was scorching. I had to throw up my jersey. So he brought that time, he brought in, you know, the bottle or a billy can of dope. And I said, oh, Jesus, Johnny, the torch is deadly noise at him. So he gave me, I took about three slugs out of it. But he sure as God is my judge. For 5 minutes, I never saw the ball. I was up and down the field. I could see legs moving, but I couldn't see the ball. And I didn't know whether it went out or not. And I was in a deadly state. And I was saying, Jesus, what are we going to do? I can't walk off the field. But that is true.
But Moss, come here. There was a match on the anyway. It was a very important game for Plistoyle and Clonmacken, and there was only point in it. And I was playing midfield anyway with this fella, and we had a bit of a spatter.
Yeah.
And you said, right, boys, you have to go. And I said, you, Moss, don't. My mother is in the sideline. Oh, Christ, John Boy wouldn't do that at all to you, said. Of course, she was not in the sideline. But Moss, thanks, no, it's a long time ago. Thanks for not putting me off that day.
Yeah. And Moss, thanks for joining us.
Do you know who was a great collector we got on to matches?
Yeah.
Mort Kelly.
Oh, Mort was great. Mort was great.
Well, he told us some great yarns. Well, I tell you a couple of them.
Go on, tell us.
Tell us one, and you tell us one.
I'll tell you one. Long ago, when the farmer's house, they're bringing the sow that the bonnets and said in the kitchen. You knew all that years ago.
Yeah.
They're bringing the sow in here to the bonnets. Came out of 8 or 9 or 10 of them. But they'd have to stay up there at night. And if he was standing up, they'd give a rope at a tummy to put it and lying down. That he won maybe for 30, 40 seconds a day. And it was called rubbing the stomach. I can't think of the right thing here. Tickling the stomach. Tickling the tummy. So, anyway, the father stayed up the first night. We waited for the orange and the dark always at night. And the wife stayed up the second night. And then they had a son. And they had the son, and they said, "Will you stay up this night?" And he said, "I'd be afraid to stay up." He says, "Because I'd be afraid in the dark." So I said, "Will you go for someone?" I'd go for Mary Sitchin. He was going with Mary in the quiet, and I never knew it. So he says, "Mary arrived in here, and they came in the late resort at night, and they drove on top of the table in the court in the dark, and the table banged down off the ground, and the old man brought into the bedroom. Johnny, take your belly and she lay down.
Thanks, Moss, for joining us.
Thank you, man.
Thanks very much. We're going for a quick break. Stay with us because we're with you till 7:30 tonight. Tony Gearn in the studio. Tony, you described him one time. You said, what kind of footballer did you say, John Beavers?
Well, it was quite extraordinary because I was only quoting another man. Charles Heston was making Ben Hur at the time, and they were lacking one scene to polish off the thing, like, to wrap it up, if you like. And didn't he drop into the town league in the stall? And anyway, the chariots, you know, with the spikes sticking out of them, they were based in John B. He'd go up and down through the field with these elbows. He was so angular, he cleaved all before him. He was like a plucked chicken going up and down, and boy God, did he cut him asunder. They went back, and that chariot race was based in John B. As a matter of fact, they asked him to go between the shafts at one of them cars, and he said, "I destroyed the rest of them."
John, of course, you made your own history in the line of the GA, because the man from Clare, of course, heard him especially about the GA, and not alone that, but if I'm not mistaken, the man from Clare was the only GA, the first ever GA person to walk on the boards in the area. Now, tell us, John, about the man from Clare, and I think it was based on Betty Crowley. Tell us about it.
Well,
would be, the title would be a fella called Bert Crowley. We played together for Moyne Cork. We played a match for Cork, actually.
And you played football with Cork?
I did, played one match with Cork. And it was a representative match for the opening of Lismore Park, which was never finished. They beat us by point, but we won the row. But Crowley was a Kilrush man. But to get back from the man from Clare, I got the idea from the man from Clare after going over with Johnny and the boys, the Rangers, just to play that time. They'd play Clare. And they had a motorboat and a clinker boat towed on behind. Unbelievable chances, this fella. 30 or 40 fellas in these two boats going out to play football match. Incredible. And coming back again after the match. But I got the idea for writing this play out of that. And I remember I was talking to Jim Healy one night of Cork. And he says to me, have you anything for the summer coming up? I said, I have an idea about a football player. I said, you know, he said, that'd be great, he said, like. So I gave him the idea anyway. And the player was successful in Cork, but the Abbey weren't having it. At least I was told they weren't having it. But anyway, this man sitting here in front of me, one Tony Gillen, the day before had been playing in goals, maybe you should have been there, was playing in goals in the grounds tournament final in place of Johnny Cullity.
No, he's away on me.
You see? But anyway, the point is they won the match and myself and this fellow were coming up to stay the following day. And the next minute, without a word, I had bought him a present of the book, The Man from Clare, which was just published. He had it in his pocket. He caught me from behind, ran up the steps of the old Queen's Theatre, then the Abbey Theatre, and landed me into the fire and set it together, get Blyde. And this Blyde was the manager. And she was shocked. He said, tell him John B. Keane wants him. And after a while, this man appeared. He peered out with glasses, very alarmed looking. And he said, yeah. He did that to me. Put up his finger. And went, no, and Tony pushed me in the door. And I came out 10 minutes after with a cheque, an acceptance cheque for £80, which we had drank before that weekend was over, and the play was put on later that summer.
And of course,
and
John,
I never looked back that play.
That play went all over Ireland and beyond. It was performed in the Abbey Theatre in Dublin, and it was performed especially by small drama groups
all over Ireland.
So now, during the week, we went to the Beaufort drama group.
Yeah.
Great players, Beaufort, yeah. Paddy Lynch, Brendan Lynch, John Coffey, Jim Coughlin, Mortilli, all great. But you know that they have a drama group there since the 1930s. During the week, Mary Nolan came in and she played the part of Elsie.
Mm-hmm.
Hardy Clifford came in, he played Dagan. Neely Sullivan came in and he spoke Neely. Up as Padre Gordy.
Yeah.
And Ian Joy as Jim Flynn. Just have a little listen to this now, John, the Beaufort drama group.
Once more, lads, gather up and sit down. You're a young team with the exception of Padraig here, and he's wiser than any of you. This team you're meeting, Bailabon, they're crabbed and crafty, and they'll have players from all over North Kerry. But they'll all be ancient footballers, because there's nothing good coming up to them. Here's our plan. Hit them and harry them and keep hitting them until they're tired. Wear them down first and then play the ball well to the wings, so they won't be able to run after it. Then lob the ball into the goals and every man that's near, in on top of them and no mercy. Are we right?
Right.
Who has the bag of jerseys?
That's it. I have them.
We've nothing to lose, and it could be the first time in 42 years we beat Bailabon on their own ground. Oh, it would be an awful blow to them, and they're so cocky and full of gumption always.
Oi, lads. Oi. Come on. The tide is right and the engine is running.
Right. We'll be with you in a minute. One more thing, lads. If it should happen that we're a few pints ahead towards the end of the match, they'll do all in their power to start a fight. Don't hit back if you're winning.
What about the ref?
A cop man, is it? Sure, he'd enjoy nothing better than to see Kerry and Clare fighting.
Come on, Coast.
I have a feeling we'll win today.
So have I.
Don't waste yourself in the first half, Padraig. Leave all the young lads do the work. Wait till the last quarter and you'll see gorgeous opportunities. Let yourself go then. Hammer the goals with low balls and we'll bring the cup back to Coos tonight. What was wrong with young Jim Flynn? I see you talking to him.
Ah, the usual. I think he's afraid. More nervy than anything else. He'll be all right when the whistle is blown and the ball is thrown in.
I hope so. I hate fellas that have to work up their courage. Come on, or we'll miss the boat.
Weren't you ever afraid yourself?
As big a coward as the next fella, but that's not what I mean. So there's nothing to be afraid of in this world. I was only afraid of three things in my life.
What?
Rusty blades, casky porter, and parish priest housekeepers. Come on.
The poor folk drama group, they came into Killarney during the week, and Sean Hurley, who did great work on Radio Killarney.
Lovely diction. Lovely diction. Every word, there wasn't a word lost.
And they told me to tell you that if you want to collect the royalties and that, you send the bill to Sergeant Jack McGrath. He's in charge of the poor folk. Because he's a man. No, we're going to come in line again, John. That's the Beaufort Drama Group. They're lovely stuff. Okay. Mas Tehan from Castle Island is on the line. Mas, how are you?
Hello there.
Hello, Mas.
You're welcome.
Yeah, my regards there, sir.
You can give them yourself away with you.
How are you, Mas? How are you keeping, old stock?
Not too bad, dog. Anyway, my memory is John B. Zaster. Put me down memory lane there, talking about Mas Colbert. We had an ABC man training board one time, called the Sticker Brown, I said, John B.
You know him well.
And we had Tony McAuliffe played for us as well in the 1948 County Championship. Tony was working here with Johnny Sweeney, the contractor. We played Boherby inside in Killarney, and we beat him to a good Boherby team. Again, from the river was full forward down in Tighealy, and the two corner forwards was Tighe and Marine, which came from John B's wife, came from Mary.
Right.
He was in one corner, and Tony McAuliffe was the other. Tony used to be above in the flaggings that time practicing. We'd be all down there as you lads. And Tony would go alongside the corner flag and he'd show you about it. The pass of the boot that you'd have to hit the ball with to get it over from the corner flag. And he, that day, the first ball he got was nearly the corner flag and he stuck it straight the day over the bat from the corner flag.
He's a great shot. He's a mighty shot.
Mas, thanks for joining us.
Where do I know? There's a few more things.
Away with you.
What I'd like to say about John B. John B. pulled the Cashel Island District Board out of a big hole one time. Tom Donlan, that won a county championship medal with us in 1950, he later joined the wrong crowd, which is the Legion, when he went to live in Killarney. He took over chairman of the District Board, and I was secretary, and we were in debt. It would appear very small now, which was big that in. No, that was before there was any talk of dirt tax of the Cayman Islands or anything, since we were about £300 a day. And no way in the wide world could we get anywhere of doing it. And I had seen Scythe, the first production of Scythe inside in Sulia. And we got an idea that we'd bring Scythe to the Astor. Michael O'Brien, that lived above in the Limerick Road, Dennis Breen, affectionately known in Castle Island as Michael, was married to John B's sister-in-law, another one of the O'Connors from Meath.
That's right.
And I went up and had a chat with her, and she contacted John B, and John B said that the distorted group would come in at Baldwin, for the day after Baldwin. But in the meantime, about a week after, I heard that there was another of the fellas bringing J.B. Healy of Cork, I think to the Southern Theatre Group.
That's right.
That they were bringing Sive as well. So I told Danny in a little rest of thought, and he said, you have to give another one up to Nari. I ran up to Nari and I told my story. Sit down, she said, or we'll get a heart attack. We contact John B, and I'm damn for sure he'll pick it up. Anyway, the long and the short, which was the Tom Donlan got rest of thought, and myself drove out to this door, told John B the story, and got to finish. John B said, have no worries. John B Healy, J.B. Healy will not appear in this line, and the Distor group came in and we cleared out it and had a few pounds.
Good, Mas. Listen, thanks for joining us, Mas. Well done, because we're seeing the comment I know, because Mick Murphy from Vintry wants to talk to you, John.
Oh, Mick.
Mick, how are you?
I'm fine.
I know that you want to talk about John's late brother, Mick. Away with you.
Well, John's late brother, Eamon.
Oh, yeah.
I used to meet up with him in Dublin. I was teaching in Dublin for 5 years in the early 50s. And we used to meet up now and again, like, in places, haunts around the Pro Cathedral and the GPO and places like that. But on the night of the 55 final, somehow I found it a fierce anti-climax. And I was out in, was it Bray or in Malahide, now I forget, and I was sitting up on the steps of the stairs, looking down at the square town below. And a step above me was Eamon, the old Eamon, the great Eamon. He was sipping his pint and surveying the scene below and really enjoying it. And he spoke a few words to me anyway. They were very kind words, and I remember them well still. And I I always treasure those words. Of course, John B was still called the team of the 50s. He was called the one in a row team.
Teddy's team, out. Teddy and Connor's team, out there, was it. The one in a row team. Tonight, just to unite Teddy and then to get him wetting his nails.
Mick, thanks for that story. Yeah. And it was nice talking to you.
Yeah, very good.
Thank you, Mick.
Thank you. We're staying in the comment line now because we were backing up Paddy Prendergast, a great Mayo footballer. Paddy, how are you?
Great, thank you, Wishy.
Good friends with this man here?
Well, as a matter of fact, he's a much loved man in this house. And as his beloved and lovely Mary. There's no doubt about that.
Ah, Paddy, thank you, my friend.
No
one of the great fullbacks of all time.
Privileged to be in, with John B. anytime. Marvellous.
Thank you, Paddy. We'll have a pint, Paddy, when I see you.
With the help of God.
With the help of God.
And I tell you something, Wishy. I always thought he was the ideal make for a good centre field.
Why would you say that now, Paddy?
Because he's a 6 foot tall man.
Yeah.
He has the make of an athlete. You know, the long legs and narrow hips and that. You know.
Right.
He has mentally, of course, well catered for upstairs, and quite frankly, I have the present day fellas, in my opinion, don't use their intelligence at all. The managers use their intelligence. And finally, he had the right temperament. And by that I mean, John B. would not reverse from an opponent under any circumstances.
Thanks,
Paddy.
Paddy, thanks for that.
Wait a minute, Wishy.
Oh, right, away with you, John.
Yeah. I want to mention here about a forum of entertainment.
Right.
It's now almost forgotten. That was half-time football.
Right.
Right. Yeah, yeah. When the whistle be blown, soon the time to bring on the clowns. When the gladiators had left the arena, the clowns came on. And that, in my book, is the most dangerous form of football ever played. You could be literally brain. I saw an ambulance coming to Listowel Sports Field in a couple of occasions for fellas that got a belt of an elbow into the head. Shoes, loose shoes would be flying everywhere. There were more shoes kicked over the bar than balls. And the excitement was hectic, and there were great rows. And then suddenly, when the whistle blew, all the clowns withdrew to the wings again. But then, another great comic aspect of the game, when you try to call a fella off that wasn't playing well, you know? And he'd remove himself to the corner of the field, you see. And you'd say, come off, you bastard, come off! And he wouldn't come off, you see. Did you ever try to go out in the morning long ago to catch a donkey from the bog? You know, or to catch a wild pony? There's no way in the world you could catch him, because the nearer you'd come to him, he'd rear up and he'd go off. You couldn't get these fellas to come off the field once they'd gone on. And finally, there's one other thing I want to talk about here. Is that there's a man in the store called Lofty Keller. Small man, Lofty. Probably one of the smallest men in town, but huge in heart and temperament. And we were playing a match one day outside Listowel, a very nasty game of football. And some nasty characters, incidentally, on both sides. Now, Lofty was in height, 5 feet, feck all. He wasn't an inch taller. And the next thing was, and he was getting a fierce black eye from this giant of a man. He was marking about 6'2". And he said to me at half-time, listen, he says, I can't take any more of this. He says, your man has me killed and they're afraid. Do nothing about it. Do not you do no. He said, go over, I said, when he starts. And give him one loader, I said, if I fished into the job. I said, is it cutting you? I said, well, no, do what I tell you, I said. The match was restarted anyway. Lofty walked across, looked up at your man and said, hi. Your man looked down. Lofty jumped up, hit him with his left hand. What did your man do? Got a fit of Olegonin. Ball and crying, he had to be carried off the field.
Paddy, thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
John B. there. John B., I know what to say in the book, in the opening of the field in 81, you spoke about the pool of water at the bottom of the left-hand side of the Emmett Sports
Club. That's right.
A dangerous piece of ground.
It's a brother of Lofty's, actually. A fella called Darby Broder was marking him, and Darby Broder was the only man in Gaelic football ever put off the field by a referee, Moss Lyons, for the crime of attempted drowning. He followed Kelleher into the water, Connie Kelleher into the water, and Connie was going great till they came out of the deep part. And then Darby's big strides, you know, caught up with him, and he stepped over him, you see, and he knocked him into the water. And the result was that Moss Lyons blew the whistle, and Darby said, what are you putting me off for? He said, I'm putting you off, you blackguards, and Moss, for attempted drowning. But as things turned out, Moss didn't put him off at all. Because Connie spoke up and said, he said, it was my short legs that drowned me, he said, not Darby's long ones.
John, before we got to Morris, stack in the comment line. You told me a story in Killarney only before we got to Morris about the full back and the full forward. There was a lovely full forward and an awful big full back. Do you remember that one?
Trying to take it out.
Huh? I hope the lovely full forward came in to nap the full back and he turned around to you, you don't umpire the full back system. Whatever you do, John, hold these false teeth, they don't die yet, this young fella alive.
Tell us that one.
That's another one of your hands. Put them in your pocket, the match as well, really, I'd like to hoot.
Maris, there. Come, sorry for keeping you, Maris.
Hello. Steve, Miss Father.
How are you, Maris?
How are you? Good evening to the panel.
Yeah.
You know, I think that John B. will never get the credit for all the help he has given to referees down the years. I don't laugh at this.
They wouldn't agree with you. They wouldn't agree with you in my van, Maris.
Not always. No. You know, this advice was given more vocally at times when the Image team or maybe the Kerry team were being beaten. On these occasions, the referee would be left in no doubt as to where his duty lay. It has been alleged that I myself have on occasion helped him out in that worthy cause, something which I suppose in retrospect now I couldn't deny. An example of that now is that some years ago Emmett played a match in Tarbert, and John, his son John, who now lives up in Kilkenny, was playing. And he gave his opponent a belt in the jaw right in front of the referee and knocked his opponent. And the referee waved the play on. So we came upon the referee in the pub in Tarbert. We stayed.
Larry.
Well, Larry was half his name.
Larry Wigan.
Anyway, he came over to us and we had a couple of drinks. And I think it was, I said to him, you know, you made a great job refereeing the match, but you should have put off John Keane. And Jay said, no, he said, no, I couldn't do that. No, he said, why? Because he said, I promised John B. I'd never put him off.
And you know why?
His wife
wasn't well at the time,
yeah? Yeah, somebody very dear to John was very ill at the moment.
And
he was under stress.
And Larry was doing his bit.
And I have no doubt that Larry, on that occasion, tempered justice with mercy, as John B. said.
Maris, listen, thanks for joining us.
Yes.
Thanks very much for joining us.
Right, John. There's a poem here written by Jack Ash, Sean Ash. He was right for the Kerry champion about a Borough and Glown final. This what's quoting in verse 2 this. 1935. The ploughman left his horses and the tradesman left his trade. The world and his wife were there to see the contest played. Excitement spread like lightning flash through every house and town. The night the Borough Rovers met in combat with the Glown. The father and the mother, yes, the husband, wife and child, were there in great profusion and went mad careering wild. Said a young wife to her husband, sure I'll pawn my shawl and gown, and I'd bet my last brown penny on the chances of the glow. So just an example of the wonderful stuff. And there's one here they'd written, I think, it was the year after. A Camogie game. It's just an example of the type of verse that was written at the time. Now, this was written by P. O'Connor of Kilsynan. And at the present time, if you go into Massey Welch's in the square, where I often had a drink with my friend Baldy Sullivan here from Stanmore, Dennis's father, you'll see sitting inside there on Saturday evenings playing a game of 41, Julia Mary. She must be 90 now if she's a day. She's still to the good, and still well able to stick to her hands. And a woman you have to watch in any game of cards. Here it goes anyway, going back 60 years. Then Julia Mary, evergreen, our idol of the day, in winning vein appeared again and matchless in the fray. She many a fancy movement spoiled and shone in each attack, while hurling fine to halt her line, I noticed Kathleen Stack. Peg Mangan led another raid and fired the volley in, but inches wide a score denied the charming girl from Glynn. Yet the score was due and we got it too from our captain, brave Babe Joe. From a free far out put up a pint, like the Babe of years ago. She was a sister now of Seamus Wilmots, who was registrar of University College Dublin and himself a fine footballer, gave great service at Leicester. But these are just examples of the great stuff, you know.
That's a great book, Tony.
Great book.
Marvellous.
And there's just one more here, isn't it, Eamon? This is 1953, then. I remember being at this in the side, and I remember another match. We were asking how much money was taken. It was threepence to win. And they took £50 at the gate. So at that time, there was 80 threepences in a pound. So 80 by 50 is 4,000, plus maybe 1,000 school children and other people who couldn't afford to go in. So that you had, say, 4,000 to 5,000 people. And all, this is it. It was again by Sean Ash, who's to write for the Kerryman. 'Twas the 13th of August in the year was 53, and the bustle and excitement filled expectant hearts with glee. So we all stepped off together to the field above the town to see those faultless finalists, Borough Rovers, in the glow. The game began a tick of time, the ref was Jackie Lyne. The whistle held in master hands was an inspiring sign. It was a hectic struggle and the history will go down, an eventful epic final twixt the Borough and the Glown. At half-time score, the Borough were one goal point behind. The momentum was increasing and the play was fast as wind, and hats and caps were doffed aloft as the ball sped up and down between those great contenders, Borough Rovers and the Glown. The last verse. We've seen those sturdy rivals clash in many a well-fought game. Their display on Thursday night last has by lengths advanced their fame. 'Twas a grand sight again to see the cup borne through the town and rest once more by the field shore as treasure of the glow. We can be very proud of those. That's great stuff. That is the culture and the literature of the GA. That's the bedrock. It's in this stuff we build our future. And what I've often felt since about the GA would say that my generation, as I know it, was the first generation without conquest. We were born into freedom. I was born in 28 into a free country. 5 years before, less, there was a murderous civil war. Thankfully, no over. Before that, you had the War of Independence, and all our families were involved, you know, one way or the other. And I remember to say to myself, like, that I said this one time, it must be about 1943 or 4, I was reading that some fellow said, who needs, I think it was Ford, Maddox Ford said, who needs heroes? But we needed heroes, because our heroes were gone. And our heroes had maybe reduced themselves, you see, in the eyes of the public because of this non-stop warring and this factional war.
And John, you wrote somewhere that you needed to play Gaelic football to form your character, is that right?
We have to.
You did.
To make a man of you. You know, I mean this, to make a man of you. But I remember as well that we needed heroes, and we got them. And we got them in Kerry most of all. We got Cahan, and we got Bond, and we got Johnny. We got all these great, tremendous men.
You mentioned Jackie Lyne.
Jackie was great stuff, man. Yeah. And then you have, take the women, like Mara Lyne, Paspalan's mother. Take Kitty O'Connell, Teddy's wife. And they were great. In fact, I told Kitty O'Connell, Ted's wife, I wrote a song. Just finished it a month ago, called Sweet Lestore. She was always at me to write a song about Lestore. It's very short. So, Kitty, if you're listening...
When we come back, John, we're going for a quick break. And for Kitty Connor, when we come back...
And,
John,
and for Mara Lyne.
For Mara Lyne. First time ever heard in public, Sweet Lestore. 066-236-666. We'll switch you right until 7:30. Stay with us for a quick break. Which until 7:30 066-236-666. Tony Gamer's name with us. John, no, you were talking about the women of the GAA, and you wrote a special song.
Hundreds of them still.
And just before you start there, Eamon, you have a few comments.
No, there's a message in from Kitty from Killarney. Would you sing the new song you wrote recently before you finish? So there you are.
Thank you. Well, this is for Kitty. Kitty, this is I hope my voice holds out, Kitty. And for Mara Lyne and for Leisha Welch of Ballylan, for all the great Kerry wives, because there wouldn't be any Gaelic football if there weren't wives and mothers.
We'll get a few more comments there now before you start. John Eamon, have you a few more there?
From Tom Slattery for John B. Thanks for the memories. It's great to hear you back on the air. Good wishes to John B. from Patrick Sullivan Bale. And thanks to John B. for signing books for Caroline. Caroline from Limerick.
Okay. Right, John. It's all yours.
I hope my voice holds up. This is for all the times we sang in the pub with Teddy, when Teddy was hale and hearty. Sure, he's still with us. Great footballers, you know, they never die. They only fade. They don't even fade away.
And his son was on the Kerry Miners with your son. Connor was the son of the Kerry Miners 1 year, and Teddy's son, Tig, was the Kerry Miner captain.
That is right. Tig, a granddad in Donewell in Killarney.
1977.
And anyway, this is for those great women. It's a song about my native town. I've always been threatening to write it. I only hope my voice lasts. Oh, sweet Lestore, I've loved you all my days. Wait a minute, I started again. Oh, sweet Lestore, I've loved you all my days. Your shining streets, your towering spires and squares, where sings the field its everlasting lays, and whispers to you in its evening prayers. Of all fair towns, few have so sweet a soul, are gentle folk, compassionate and true. Where'er I go, I love you, sweet Lestore, and always doth
my distant cap to you. Down by the field of willows deep there once, from magic boughs where soft the night wind sighs, how oft I've strayed along your moonlit lands, where late love blooms and first love never dies. Of all fair towns, few have so sweet a soul, are gentle folk, compassionate and true. Where'er I go, I love you, sweet Listowel, and always doff my distant cap to you. That's for you, Kitty, and the rest of it.
Tony,
what
do you say about that now? Where would your favourite position, if you were to get on the Kerry team, John, what position would you
All right, half forward. But the point is, I wouldn't get on the Kerry team because I don't think I had a commitment, but I was getting injuries so often. Like, I was injured every month. I used to play, like it's a fight of fighting above his weight. I played away harder than I was actually able to play. You know, my son John had the same kind of a fight.
John,
played,
talking about your son, you also had Joanne as your daughter, Billy, and John. And now, what we have on the line to talk to you, we have Joanne and we have Billy. How are you, lads?
Hello.
Joanne, nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you too.
And listen, Billy.
And Tony and John B, good to talk Hello. To you.
Yeah. How are you, Bill?
I'm fine, we sure you're.
How'd you get back from Roscommon, all right?
Sad journey home, but we'll rise again.
Listen to me, I heard you in the late night up there. Anyway, listen to me. What kind was this man here when you were growing up in the relation to football? Talk to us, Joanne, about it.
Well, we say football was the second religion in our house always, and my mother never minded if we didn't make mass on a Sunday when the Munster final was being played, as long as she realised our place of worship was Fitzgerald Stadium or Parky Creeve, and that was that. My father and football, I must tell you a little story about him. As you know, he's an amiable rogue. But when I was about 16 or 17, he was mad for me to drive with his car. I was delighted with myself. I was thinking I'd be able to go to Ballybunion driving and gallivanting and chasing fellas and everything. But no, he had an ulterior motive, and that was that I would drive him to countless matches.
Because he could take a few drinks.
Exactly. And I did it for many, many years, and we great crack. And he devised a system then whereby I could drink a load of shandies, but I used to end up in the loos of places like Tiddeen's, you talked about, the Halfway, Bobbeen's, Purcell's, Mikey Joe's, you name them, all over the country. I was there.
She was a good driver. So,
she was a great driver.
A good driver, yeah. No better woman.
I remember one day we went to Dingle to the opening of the park there, and we went down afterwards to Bonds.
Oh, yes.
And we had a great sing-song there. We met Jerry Brashton and my van and Eamon Horton, that lovely tenor.
Oh, lovely
tenor.
Yeah.
Lovely voice,
oh,
Eamon. And we were singing, and I didn't have the flu that I was able to sing. But then my mother Bond gave us a massive salmon. Feed of salmon and brown bread and everything like that.
Yes.
And I forgot to pay for it, and I sent her the check the following day, which was never cashed.
Yes.
What a flahool house.
Yeah. We had a great time those times.
We had great times. Yeah. They were lovely times and lovely people.
Yeah, and I want to tell you another story about him. Years ago, when I was about, I'd say, 8 or 9, my father came home drunk, which was unusual for him, from a football match. And he came up to my room, and he came in anyway. He was a bit inebriated, as I said. And he paid me the ultimate compliment. He said, if you'd been a boy, you would have made a dandy footballer.
Well, Billy, you were a boy, and listen to me, I know that you were a dandy footballer. You lined out with the Kerry Miners once.
I think it was one of the shortest ever appearances
in a
Kerry Miners
jersey. Talk to us anyway,
Bill. I will, of course, wish you. Well, part of, I suppose, the memories growing up, he was a great man to bring us to Thor Park. I was in Thor Park for the first time when I was 6 to see that grounds tournament final. Tony Gearn, who was there with him, was playing, a lifelong friend of all of ours in the family. And he was a great man to bring us to matches. But it could be fraught with danger at times, you know, because he wasn't the quietest man at the side, I know. But he was never killed anyway. That was the main thing. A few close encounters, all right, especially up in Tullamore and places like that.
Well, yes, I remember being in Tullamore one day, an awful tough match.
That's right. Yeah.
Vital league match we had to win. And O'Connell was playing a blind, and he kicked a ball. It was about 65 yards out and went wide by an inch. And all the Offaly crowd roared and clapped and everything. And Connell was sitting alongside me. He nearly got us all muddled. He turns around to the fellow alongside to me. Excuse me, sir, he said. Do we clap wides here? He said, well, man, we caught him by the throat. We didn't
know. We had water to it. We had closer to
Paddy Moriarty.
Would you?
And I remember, that was the day, I think, that me and Hollow here gave a shout down to the side. And he said, who's that lad that just came on, he said, that swallowed up the field now, Mikey Sheehy.
Go away.
That's right. He said, I won't ever have to ask you his name again, he said.
So listen, Joanne and Billy, GAA was a big thing in your house, outside of all his other activities.
It certainly was, Lisa, yeah, it was.
A great thing in our lives, really.
He loved the North Kerry Championship, you know, he never managed to win one himself, but yeah. In 1976, Conor and myself both won medals. John was a bit young that time. We beat Talbot in the final, and there was fierce celebrations on the Sunday night, and I brought the cup in the front door of our house. I was about 17 or 18 at the time, and I brought the cup in the front door of the house, and John B was there waiting for us. He was in good form now, I suppose, with the excitement of the match got to the limited stage. But there was about six or seven coloured gentlemen just sitting inside the door. And they were Nigerian people who were over to learn how to run power stations. Talbot was the most modern power station in Ireland at that time. And these fellas were sent over to figure out how to run a power station. But when I came in with the cup anyway, there was John B with his arms around them, shaking their hands and hugging them and kissing them. And he brought him down 6 pints of Guinness. And they were plied with drink for the night, and the poor Nigerian fellas, they staggered out the door and off the stage. But the following night, there was no one at all in the bar. Everyone was gone to belly bunions, the man of the match thing. And my poor mother was falling off behind the bar. And about 10 Nigerian fellas came into the bar, and there was maybe 3 or 4 at the counter. And my mother said, "Are you all right? Can I help you?" "No, no, no." She says, "What time does the party start?"
Listen, Billy, Eamon O'Sullivan here, you mentioned the North Kerry Championship.
Yeah.
What's so special about the North Kerry Championship?
Well, I think it was very well described by the Image captain last year, and we're playing Castle Island shortly, so I'm not going to say too much about that one, but it was well described by Billy McKelligott, who was a great North Kerry Championship player, and he described it as blood, muck, guts and shit, and that's what it's all about, really.
Listen, Billy and Joanne, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Lads, we're having a great evening here with your dad.
About the championship, Listen,
before you go off, hold on, no.
About the North Kerry Championship, Jim Braston once said publicly, that it was the hardest championship of all to win. And Tom Clifford of Limerick used to always believe that the Mustard Junior Cup was the hardest until he saw an R. Kelly championship match. And I was at an R. Kelly championship match with Burl Ives, and he never saw anything like it. And about Burl Ives, you see, Nadine Kelleher, Johnny Shea, the King of Song, and Bob Murphy, we called in one day to see Johnny Shea and Tully, Mr. Ives and myself on our way to Castle Gregory. Ives was a great character and loved the song. And he had a big Volkswagen called the Buffalo, in which he had a bed and a bar and a couple of guns, everything. And we called in anyway to Bobby Innes, and Johnny Shea was inside, and he sang Because for us, you see. And anyway, he sang it. And Nadine, of course, shook hands with Nadine Keller. But Mr. Ives, he said, "Will you give us a bet yourself?" And Bud Life sang a song in it. "Jesus Christ," said Nadine, you couldn't touch Johnny, he said. "You couldn't touch Johnny." The fine voice, he said. They named him. "I know that," Ned says, "Bond, but see, Johnny wasn't born with a frog in his throat like I was." Too bad, he said. Like, you know. Yeah. But to get back to Nadine, like, you know, Nadine was one of the great characters of all time. And I remember we were having a night for the St. Mary of the Angels in Tralee, you see. And one of my great passions in life was watching Gil Bryan's band marching up.
I marched behind him in the county final.
Well, I marched behind him myself in the intermediate county final, which we won in Tralee. We had not carried an intermediate team, we'd no senior team, and we won that. But Gil Bryan and the Slasher leading them up in the front with the serious face of him. Jesus, they were great times. I'd never forget him. And I remember anyway that evening Nadine had a mule called Basil, a very trickety, pernickety creature. And some fella gave the mule a wallop, and he said to me, Nadine, he said, "Listen, any man," he said, "the blackguard, the mule," he said, "he'd blackguard his own mother," he said. "What is a mule," he said, "but an orphan?" You know. And of course, what's that they say about mules without pride of ancestry or hope of posterity? You see, so that Nadine knew what he was talking about. But that was a great evening. And the mule bolted that evening as well. And I went out anyway to be the referee for the thing. And I said to Bob Murphy, "How the hell am I going to get this thing going?" You know, it was... He said, "Put off Cahan." He said, "Cahan, it might be a job, but Cahan, that wouldn't make me put off." He said, "You know." So anyway, what I did was I said to I said, "Bobby, in watch on the side in a minute." I said, "So Cahan turned his back and went off." And I pointed my hand after Cahan that he was put off, you know. But we had a marvellous evening. Nadine was the life of the party. And his loss to Tully was inestimable, you know. Because and one thing about Nadine, like, Nadine would never take you where he wanted to go. He always took you where he wanted to go, the most convenient pub stops. And he was a credit to Tully.
John, we're going for another quick break here, and we'll be back in a few minutes. We're reaching till 7:30 on Terrace Talk, talking to John Dickey. Come back to Terrace Talk, and as you know, now we're right through till 7:30. John B. Keane in the studio with us, and Tony Gearn, and Liam, and you have a few comments, and you must go through that quiz.
Well, the quiz winner picked by the man himself is Donald Erving, Castle Lawn, Ballyhigh, County Kerry. The answer was Manus O'Sullivan, referee the county football final. The winner receives a £50 voucher from our sponsors, Quill. Next week's question: who are Kerry's next opponents in the National Football League in Tralee on November the 15th? Answers on the postcard to Terrace Talk. Couple of comments, Castle Gregory Carler. This is for John B, I'm sure. Every footballer in his day had a watery knee. How come that's no longer a problem? Paddy O'Connell Tralee wants to ask John B what happened to the famous Clon Mackin team that was suspended for life. Thanks to John B for everything through the years, the lads of the Mad Lord do, eh? A Borough supporter, whatever happened to the Borough Cup? He thinks John B might have it. Eileen Walsh, for John B, who do you think is the best referee in the last 20 years in our career? Thanks to John B for all the good advice and good nights through the years, Stephen Stackless role. And finally, from Mike Murphy in Limerick, the caller is driving from Tralee to Limerick, wants to congratulate all concerned on a wonderful programme. He is nearly home and never felt the journey because the programme is so entertaining.
John B, before we go to the comment line, can you answer any of the answers? Questions? Can you answer any of them?
The what we need.
I think now you see that modern technology has come up with new diseases, and the more fanciful the name now for the disease, the better. But the fellas wouldn't go down long ago when they were injured. I remember Paddy Mann got a belt from Donny Donovan in Cork in the Munster final. Two blocky men. Donovan was a powerful man. Clean footballer, powerful man. He'd born almost a massive flake, and I could see Bond was shook. And I said to him after, I wouldn't give the bastard a sort of it, says Bond. You see, fellas would not. Nowadays they go down and they start writhing on the ground, you know, and holding themselves, soccer players especially, trying to put off their opponent. That's totally unsportsmanlike. I think that's wretched.
I asked old Bracken Regan, the great Kerry footballer, you know, yes. I asked him lately, I was talking to him, yeah, about a hamstring. Did he ever pull a hamstring? Yeah. He said, he never pulled one, but the only place he saw them was in a butcher shop. We're going to the comment line now, John, because Sean Wentz, the chairman of the county board, a man who's running the GA in the county,
great man, Sean,
you're welcome.
Thank you, Richie.
Yeah, what have you to say to your friend from North Kerry here?
I want to concur with the last limit, the listener there from Limerick. I'm on my way from my van to Killarney, and I'm just in Killarney now.
Yeah.
The fabulous night's entertainment.
Thank you, Sean.
I want to congratulate John B, and I want to talk just about his passion, and not his passion for Kerry football, but his passion for North Kerry football.
Yes, exactly.
He's a passionate believer in the North Kerry Championship and matches like that. Of course, he loves to ride to my van, people that have been to pubs before matches or after matches. He was always at them and talking about them. But I was inside John B the night of the races this year in the store, and I was beginning to John B that I played in 7 losing North Kerry finals. Yeah. Christ, boy, he said, you were lucky. I played in 6 losing semi-finals.
We never won it. We never won an arc. But Sean was a Mary Kerry team, but for illness.
Yeah.
Sean was a class footballer.
Sean,
if you're, are you there?
Yes, I'm there.
I wish you every success. You're making a great job so far, and we're all very proud of you. And of course, you've a lovely, charming wife as well, and she's a great back to you. That's very important.
Sean, this man is a great GM, isn't he?
Great GM, well, most respected GM in North Kerry. He'd love to see John Beer.
But I often lose the head a bit at matches with it. But I remember I never left my van sober after the game.
Yeah, well, one of my longest memories of John B is when I got the thing inside the hallway in Boston, and the door opened to the bar, and he argued 5 or 6 my van boys, and they're fit to go down his throat, and they all laughing and singing 10 minutes later.
Eileen was alive then, and Eileen used to sing Ned of the Hill. Nobody could sing it like her. And then Willie Finucane was a poet down the road in Knockanore. He wrote some wonderful songs. And I remember we won a minor final there one time, and they against my van. And Michal Quigley was a big tall lad, and he stood up and he discovered a goose, the most of a goose, inside in the snow where Mrs. Boston had put us out of the way, you know. Yeah. We started picking at it, and she came in and she caught us. She said nothing. She landed back after a while with plates and a big knife, and gave the knife to Quigley. That was the kind she was.
That's the way she was.
They were a flahool house.
Sean, listen, thanks for joining us.
Congratulations on your job.
Yeah, thank you, Sean.
All the best, Sean, thank you. Sean, better luck than yesterday. It was hard luck yesterday, but we'll rise again.
We have another great GM on the line to talk to you, Dennis P. O'Sullivan, the Post Office Kilgarvan man. Dennis, how are you?
Man, Dennis.
How are
Dennis,
you, my man?
Come to
well?
Corgard, Chris, John B.
Gurumila Mahagut, my friend.
You are too modest. I must enlighten Weishi a bit more about our connection with Cork football. A lifelong friend of mine, a great Sir Myman, great Cork Gael, and former officer of Cork County Board, Derry Gowan,
Wonderful.
He was secretary of Fermoy Football Club for years, during the great days of Fermoy Football. He signed a young fella who was graduating in January. And every time I meet or hear from Derry, he refers to John B. as one of those great Kerrymen he signed. He always mentions John B. and asks for him in the annual letter and Christmas card. And he feels his football ability was never fully appreciated in his native Kerry. And had he remained with them, he would have become a permanent fixture in Cork senior football sides.
There are no.
You're a regular visitor, John B., to Bobby Hanley's, the Lansdowne St. Mayor.
I always did, Bobby's.
Next time I meet you, I must have one of Derry's tributes dug up for you.
Thanks, Dennis. Thanks. And Dennis, thanks very much for joining us. Because the comment line is busy. No, there's a great North Kerry footballer. Is he the greatest man ever to come out of North Kerry, the greatest footballer, Tim Kennelly. Tim, how are you?
Good evening, Rishi and Damon, yes. And John. And
the greatest centre halfback the country ever produced, right. Tim Kennelly. And there's one thing I would like to say about Tim. Tim is the only powerful man I ever knew that I never saw do a dirty thing in a football field.
Yeah, yeah.
Tim was a great footballer. Tim didn't have to hit fellas. He let them hit him. He was a credit to Listowel. In 1976, when we won a long way to the championship, and we're waiting for another one next Sunday against Castle Island. We'd have to win this if we'd get into Division 1. We have to win it. We have to win it. But I'm so glad Tim rang, because I have a great affection for him. And for his son Tiger is a personal pal of mine. I have great interest in the lads. And I could salute Tim from one end of the day to the other.
Now, Tim?
Because he was a credit. And I'd like to mention other, like, Gary was a great Listowel footballer, Jimmy Murray. But for me, Pat Whelan was a special forward. Pat Now, the greengrocer in the Listowel, you know, great doggy man as well. Pat was a special man and should have got on the Kerry team. There's a lot of fellas who nearly made it. There's a thousand Kerry men who nearly made the Kerry team. And you should never ask a Kerry man, who's the best footballer you ever saw? You can't answer that question. You could pick out a thousand men. I remember there was asked one time in Killarney, and suddenly a name came into my mind, Tom Long. Tom Long was a utility man. You know, you could put Tom anywhere. We brought him out in 59 when Frank Ivers said O'Connell in trouble, and Long came out and won the day.
Tom Long rang me today. He's in Galway. He was sorry to tell you that he couldn't talk to you. Tim, you're still with us there?
Yes, with you.
Talk to John there.
Yes, John, thank you very much for your compliments.
Not at all, Tim. It was a pleasure. I love you, play great stuff. It's seldom you see an All-Ireland star play great football with his own club. But you were a true exception, and you were a model to all the young fellas coming up. We're very proud of you, Tim. Because you never let us down in any way, ever.
I'd just like to say, John, your enthusiasm and your love for football in the Listowel and in North Kerry, and Kerry was unbelievable, second to none. From all ages, when they see the lads coming in the gate above them, the sports, it used to rise the young lads from the age of
12. Rise the referees as well, Tim, a bit as well.
Right up to the seniors. Maybe some evenings you might get a bit excited, but you always left no further colour stood. we won't say anything about that.
All right,
in my own teen days, John, I always looked up to you and all the great help and advice you gave.
Thanks, Tim. That's
and
very
I was really proud of you because, as I say, you really taught so much of the green and gold colours and of Listowel, and your three great sons, Conor and John, playing Kerry Minor. Not long were they your sons, but you get so much pride that they were wearing the green and gold colours. It was an honour for you, for them to do that. And of course, Billy played a major part with us in that 76 final against Tarbert in the championship. But we had all the good days as well outside of football. We had many tussle with the opposition in the politics.
Yeah, Tim, we had poor old Dean and the poor fella.
Tim, thanks for joining us.
Just one before I go.
All right, Tim. Okay, bye.
Going back to the count, back to the town hall in Tralee, and so we picked up John B and my late father and Billy. So our man was flying anyhow. So we said we'd head over to our great friend, the late Bob Murphy, for a few beers, and things were going fine. And after a while, these two beautiful ladies walked in anyway, and after half an hour, Billy and myself, we winked at each other, so we got over to the bar, and we started talking to these two girls, and chatted them anyway, and John B. turned around to my late father, because he says, Mikey, aren't we two lucky fathers? Why, says my father, at least we didn't wear two queers anyway.
Tim, thanks for joining us.
Okay,
thank you.
Mr. Hammond. Listen, Wishy, there's a comment in here which I think we'll all totally agree with, and it says that John B. Keane should be an honorary GM, and why? because John B's plays since Sive in 1959 have been part of the parcel of raising funds probably for every GA club in this country. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And we're going to another GMN up in that list door. Christy Welch. Christy, how are you?
Christy Welch, the one and only boy.
Good evening, Christy. And good evening, lads.
How are you, Chris?
Not too bad, no.
Are we going to win someday, Christy?
I'd be hopeful, all right, like, you know, but
that's I light in the tough.
It would be a big test.
That's light in the tough,
boy. Division 1 team, yeah, tough.
We have to get to Division 1 this year.
Oh, yes.
We have to get.
That's our big aim, yeah.
Yeah. Before I pass on, I have to see Listowel back in Division 1.
Well, I think over the last 3 or 4 years, maybe 10 years, I think John B would agree with this. The greatest kick he got about our football in the last 10 years was watching the Listowel underage going into county final.
Oh,
the Lone Rangers, and he would go to matches, and I'd say he could tell you about three great under 13 games we had against Tarbert outside in my
room,
but that was Keir Sullivan.
Wonderful games at Tarbert.
Uh-huh.
Christy, listen, thanks for joining us. We're getting short on time.
Yeah, listen, John B, my bill tell you there about a time I was a bit of an entrepreneur when I was growing up there, and I took a bus to Brough, and I think John B might have a good story about
it. He took a bus to Brough anyway.
We got collected, a lot of it.
He collected so much at peace office. He thought he'd provide us with music and everything, and there was music. And on the way back, we stopped in Abbey Field. He also said he'd provide food. But he gave an account to Jack O'Rourke's wife in Abbey Field about starvation and about the young fellas in this bus, that she landed in with about £20 of sausages and 8 pan loaves. She provided the food. Christy made a fortune out of it.
It
was one of the greatest nights we ever spent out there for fun.
Thanks for joining us, Chris.
Okay.
Thanks, all the best. Eamon?
Just a comment, one thing that I want to bring up is about Jake Skeaton, who just mentioned him in passing.
Yeah.
But Jake's, I think, was the unofficial Kerry selector for many, many years.
Yeah.
Because I reckon more the Stallman played for Kerry than anyone else.
I'd say if Jake said he's weird, I would anyway.
John Killer O'Callaghan, the great boxer man from Killarney, called to me today to send you his best wishes, and he said that he hopes that both of you live to be 100 years of age. And he said, you remember the night when his son boxed in Listowel and the late Dr. Welch
shot the John in.
Came in, and the doctor had to leave the fight before it was over because there was a baby being born. He said that his son won the fight. You were delighted, and he said it was the greatest boxing match you've seen, but he said it was like a dog fight.
Has he had a dog all the time?
And his dog won a Munster Championship last Sunday. And Danny Ferris, the great Killarney Jarvie, Killarney Jarvie, another friend of yours, he said that, you know, that he was asking for you, and he'll see you around international.
Pat Collins, a dear, rang to say good wishes to John B. Excellent program. Mike Carrick, Tarbert, congratulations, good wishes to John B. Privileged to know such a wonderful man. Congrats to Terrestre, excellent program. How come John B. didn't mention Gus Trimmons and Eddie Dowling?
I mentioned Eddie, but Gus was also a great, wonderful footballer.
And Tyga O'Connell, O'Connell's Pope, High Street, Killarney. Good wishes and thanks to John B. for his kindness to the
John, we begin to finish up. Would you have a lovely verse I know about your father? Would you just give it just before we go? I saw it in your... If you can't remember it, it's okay.
My father was a schoolmaster, a very quiet man. He never kicked a ball in his life. And any football I have, I got it from the Puttles. My mother was Puttle. My uncle Mick played for Kerry. Ned Puttle, you might remember him.
He was
the first cousin of mine, and a free like yourself. I am terribly proud of my father. Bitterly, faithfully proud. Let none say a word of my father or mention his name out loud. I adored his munificent blather, since I was his catch as catch can. Let none say one word of my father, because he was a lovable man. His waistcoat I remember, tobacco-perfumed parallelogram of pennied pockets. Goodbye, father. Goodbye.
Well, John, we're coming to a close. Unfortunately, we could stay all night, as everybody that ever spoke to you will tell you the same thing. And of course, Terrace Talk and Radio Kerry decided that they couldn't let you go without giving you some little small presentation for the pub at home. Billy, are you listening? Because you'll be hanging it up in the pub. Anyway, the problem was, what would we give the men like you that have got presentations all over the world, your diplomas and everything, doctor certs and everything hanging up in the bar at home? So we decided that we'd have to get something that would be unique, should be nothing else like it, would have to do with the GAA, and would have to be once ever, and would have to come from outside the country.
Yeah.
So what we did was we had the front page of a paper that was printed in America after the 47 final, the most famous All-Ireland final of all ever played. And 'tis the Irish Echo. So what we decided to do, we decided to get it framed, John, and we decided there's a beautiful photograph of Joe Cahan in the top, Bat Garvey, and there's a little bit here. Cavan and Kerry helped revive the spirit of nationality.
The fine spirit of sportsmanship, athletic powers and brotherly love displayed by Kerry and Cavan exemplify to all the world how ridiculous it is that men of this calibre are forced to obey British law. There you have Joe Trahan and Denny Lyne, and there you have Bat Garvey. That's a once-off thing, John. It's unique. It's for your pub, and we hope that you enjoy it. Sit down there now a minute, because I know...
By this now. This is a lovely gift.
I know that pub every Sunday night... that there's a special song sung, that you and your friends sing a special song. And for especially for Mary and yourself, this song is for you. John B. Keane, you're an officer and a gentleman, a good judge of whiskey, and you're a credit to the kingdom.
Right, next
week.
Thank
you, wish you.
I think is the nightingale singing there yet? Are the roses still bright by the thus memory draws from delight heritage an essence that brings of it many a year. Thus bright to my soul as 'twas then to my eyes is that bow. So